Okay, have you always lived in Stranraer?
You're recording me.
Well, no.
Okay. Yes, I have that. All my 68 years.
68 years.
Yes.
And you went to school there?
Yes, did that.
And what age would you be when you left school?
The 14.
14.
In them days, it was 14 when I left school. And I think it was about 1948. I came into the state. You're 16. Yes, and that. See.
So what was your first job?
As an electrician.
And that was
Apprentice electrician.
in Stranraer.
Yes, started in 1947.
And who got you the job?
The
Did you apply for it?
private. And then my father knew the contractor. And I got a job with him then. It was just the end of the war. And they're just starting up. Most small farms were just starting up on their own then. And you got the job with them.
So it's quite a small company.
Yes, one of about six of us all together, the finish up. And I was there until 1953.
So what's that, 5 years?
5 years. Then I'd done an apprenticeship. In them days, you only done your apprenticeship and then they paid you off. Because they could pay a man fourth, apprentice in third and fourth year, could claim journeyman's wages for him and get to only pay you the small wages. Once you come, your time finished, you got the. Your jurors, and you had to go look somewhere else.
Right.
So then I went from there up to Glasgow, and then a year up in Glasgow with the Ministry of Works. Then I come back to Stranraer, and we sped off, and then I went out to Cairnryan loading the boats, just dumping the ammunition.
How did that work? I mean, who brought the ammunition in? Was it
they come in by train, and then you loaded them onto barges. And then they're taken out, as you'll see now in the paper, this Beaufort Dyke, and dumped there. The crates were just threw over the barges, just opened their tailgate and threw the stuff out.
And how did you get involved in that?
Well, as it was not unemployed, I had a job. Because I come back for Glasgow, because the job in Glasgow finished, and I had to come back to Stranraer. I went there for about 3 weeks. And then I got a job in them days, it was Silver City. I was flying from west from Castle Kennedy, College at Castle Kennedy, to Belfast. And I was working there for about 4 months, and then I started as a background back to my trade at Cairnryan with the Royal Engineers, an electrician at Cairnryan.
Okay.
So I did. And then I was there for about a year and a half. And then I left there and went to the post office. I was 38 years there.
38 years in the post office. And what was it? Just difficult finding work as an electrician?
Oh yes, yes. But I had to move away to say up to come up to a bit here or some place. I mean, when I was in Glasgow and the job was finishing, I got offered work. It was way up in Aberdeen.
Right. Yeah.
So I just didn't fancy going up to Aberdeen and staying there and paying. I mean, and the company I was going to work for, they weren't going to give you money to pay your digs. You'd pay your digs, wouldn't you? Your wages. That wasn't the one. So I come back home again. And I started the post office. Yeah, I did.
So were you growing up as a child in Stranraer during the war?
Yes. Yes, actually during the
war. Was there a lot of activity in Stranraer because it was a port?
Oh yes, Germany dressed Stranraer right from about 1941 it started. And they built a military tomb, they built on one side of the Loch Ryan. They built the Americans come in and they built a jetty and all that for the Sunderlands and seaplanes. They were on one side of the jetty when they had big hangars. And one big hangar where they took the planes in and repaired them. And then they had about 14 small, just like shelters, where they could put the plane, take the nose of the plane in and the tail, and they repaired them and then put them back out. And then they pulled them along the road and they put them back into the water. And the traffic, you could be pulling them one along the road and the traffic's going in beneath the wings. Double decker buses and everything was going underneath the people going to take out the car, the people going to the car were going to, used to go below the wings of the double decker buses.
God.
And that. And then they would take them out and put them in the water again. And then they would go out. and they went on 36-hour missions, flying reconnaissance.
36 hours
attending to reconnaissance.
Mm-hmm.
And that, and they'd come back in, and as they were coming back, and there's maybe another seaplane, a Sunderland, taking off to go way back out. And then you'd bring them in, and when they wanted to hit the water, they brought them up to their moorings. And there was one or two accidents that way. Some of them didn't lose it, some of them just missed it, and they took a nosedive and just sunk. Mm-hmm. And those other ones were ferrying up, the pilot lost his head.
Ouch.
The head was too far, and they just caught the propeller.
Oh.
And just mm-hmm. came to so that was that. Then at the end of the war, the shortman, Harlan and Wolf, come into Sonar, and they were converting these seaplanes into passenger planes and flying them out to New Zealand and Australia as passenger planes.
Right.
And that lasted till about 1956.
Right.
And that side, that was on one side of the water. And then the other side of the water, they built two big jetties. So they did. And everything was brought in by the rail to Cairn Ryan, and they had to even cross Maine from the left. Once they left the Snar Maine crossing, railway crossing, they crossed two main roads and right alongside and into Cairn Ryan. They made a great big jetty there. Two jetties, they made one, two, three. They made three jetties, two small ones, one big one. And they could bring the boats in there and take troops out during the war and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And the main jetty, they don't know the depth of the water because it's built on floating, because the pilot drivers couldn't get the bottom.
Uh-huh.
So it's in a floating dock.
Good God, right.
And the troops used to come in there, and in fact, the American boats used to come in during the night, and the off one boat would come the chassis.
Mm-hmm.
They'd pull it up the next one, the engine and the bodywork were going to it, engine and carbon, all that were going to it. And they took it up to the next one and they loaded it up with ammunition and whatever supplies and all that, and then took it away to where it was going.
Mm-hmm.
So that was going to trade the war. And the and then, of course, during the time too, they were bringing troop boats in and loading it.
Mm-hmm.
And twice during the war, once the Queen Mary came in during the night with troops,
really?
And put them off, and then of course we've not the trains, and then they took them away in the trains to down into England and wherever they're going. And the Queen Mary was in once too,
uh-huh.
all during the night, because it was deep water, they could bring them in there
uh-huh.
and go back out again.
Uh-huh.
And that's how the American boats would come in too, loaded with troops and with supplies.
Uh-huh. So they're coming across from America?
Die from America.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And most of the troops might be coming through, they're coming out through Belfast, the troop boats
mm-hmm.
are coming in because they come in, through Dublin, then up through Dublin to Belfast, and then transferred across here.
How did you find out about this as a child? I mean, were these stories going?
You knew what was going on.
Aye.
You knew what was going on. I mean,
people talked about it at school.
The civilian workers who was working there,
uh-huh.
and then of course the troops were coming into Sonar at night time. And then there was the two canteens, there was the WVS and the Church of Scotland. They had places there. So the troops were coming in there, and then of course they were going to the pictures and into the cafes and all that. So you get to know some of them and you could talk to them.
Uh-huh.
And then through to also do was my mother worked in the WVS and the Church of Scotland canteen, voluntary work.
Aye.
At night, three, 4 hours a day. Plus, we got to know some of them, and they came to the house. Some of the soldiers and the Air Force men came to the house. So you got it all through that, John. And then, during the war, they used to bring in wounded troops in by plane.
Mm-hmm.
By the Sunderlands and seaplanes in, and used to bring them into the harbour at Stranraer.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're transferred from there onto buses. Mm-hmm. The wounded were travelled in the ambulances and buses, and they were either took to Lochnor Castle, which is about 5 miles out of Sonar.
Mm-hmm.
They took there, and some was transferred to Turnberry Big Hotel.
Turnberry Hotel, which is
Turnberry Hotel, was a hospital during the war.
Right.
And then some took up to Turnhouse, Edinburgh. Uh-huh. The troops wounded.
Oh, right.
And then when it was fit, then they were put on the train and took away to the camps in England.
Uh-huh.
And then the troops that was coming in to get out again, they would come in lorries.
Uh-huh.
And then the place where the rugby pitch is now in Stranraer used to be a transit camp.
Right.
And that's where they gave them a meal.
Uh-huh.
And then they put it back in the lorries. And then they went down and they used to, you could sometimes in Stranraer from the harbour, there'd be a mile of lorries up from the harbour up along Stair Drive and then right out the London Road onto the Dumfries Road again, sitting waiting for boats coming in to take them out.
Right.
And then you're out on a Sunday afternoon walking, quite often the troops were sitting, I mean the troops were in the lorry sitting waiting to be transported to
right.
with boats. And the troops would ask, shout at you to post letters for them.
Right.
They'd written letters and they'd wanted somebody to post them.
Mm-hmm. So did you post letters?
You post letters. Sometimes you see a great pile, maybe about 30 letters you had in your hand to post on a Sunday.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And then they went away and then they went from the... There were three ferries up from Dover. The Twickenham and all these ferries were up from Dover.
Mm-hmm.
And they were sailing from Stranraer. There's two passenger boats, and then there's one, two, three, four cargo boats, which they come up. They had you could run they're actually on the Dover to Carly run.
Mm-hmm.
They still had the tracks for the trains to go on.
Mm-hmm.
So they used to put them with the trains on the boats.
Oh, right.
And they had them that way, and then they used to come. They were there ferrying troops and the lorries and that across to Belfast. Then some went away and doing to Dublin, and then they were taken off after that to wherever they wanted to go to Dublin.
Yeah.
So you had quite a few boats, and then some sailing Cairn, and then the Cairn Ryan, and you had the boats coming out and in the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And then some saying after the war, the that much old army nation and stuff to dump.
Aye.
Well, then they take them out these barges. And dump it in the water. Plus, they had maybe one or two old liners. It was ready for scrapping.
Uh-huh.
So what they done with them? They brought them in.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they took the engines out of them,
uh-huh.
towed them into Cairn Ryan, and then they filled them full of all these army nations and whatever you could cry any scrap.
Uh-huh.
And then two tugs would come
uh-huh.
and take it out to the deep channel. And then they'd open the corks
uh-huh.
and sink the boats.
So they scuttle them?
Scuttle them.
Uh-huh.
They took the tugs off. They'd open the holes
uh-huh.
and then they'd come off and the tugs would just let them go and then they'd just scuttle us off. I'm sure there were about six boats in that way.
Nobody was worried about dumping ammunition?
No, then that's why the present day they're kicking up a row.
Uh-huh.
Because, I mean, this stuff, well, I mean, I dare say this stuff in the boats are nobody breaking loose,
mm-hmm.
but the stuff that was taken out in the aircraft, the barges,
yeah.
well, and they were in cases.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the stuff was just in wooden cases.
So what kind of stuff are we talking about? Kind of just bullets or what?
Bullets, rockets, hand grenades,
God.
The stun guns, everything, you know, and it was taken out. But the stuff, I mean, it was in the likes of the hand grenades and all the bullets and all that. They were in boxes. Well, then they just took them out and they dumped them. But now the boxes are breaking up
uh-huh.
and the stuff out of the boxes is starting to drift to inland.
Uh-huh.
And it's coming the present moment, you can see roughly from the Ireland right round the coast, Port Patrick, Corsel. And up to Ballintrae, up maybe as far as Girvan.
Mm-hmm.
And not even into Stranraer, you'll get an odd flare coming in, you'll see the thing on the shore.
Mm-hmm.
And their warnings, and if you see one, not to touch it.
Yeah.
Because they're lying there, and if you just touch them, they start flaring.
God. So they're still dangerous.
They're still dangerous,
years.
Aye.
Yeah.
I mean, they're trying to make it, they're no dangerous, but they are.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody
was worried about this at the time?
No, nobody was worried. They just take them and dump these. I mean, these barges were, maybe two barges a day was going out.
For how long?
Oh, I'd say about 2 years.
Two years.
2 years, easy.
So two barges a day for
Day,
2 years.
yes. In most cases, too. I mean, it's not to be said, but I mean, the barges were supposed to go out so far and then open their tailgates. But if you're in a hurry, what are you going to do? They're going to open before you should. That's how I think. It's some of these stuff that's coming in now.
So there's the stuff that wasn't sunk in the right place.
Stripe proper places.
And you were part of this yourself for a while?
Aye.
How long did you?
Well, I was only about 2 weeks I was on it. But then when I went to work at Cairn Ryan, that was with the MOD, I worked for about a fortnight. And then when I went to work for the Royal Engineers, where we had the electrical work, we had all the electric cranes and all that to look after.
Right.
So, I mean, they were doing it then. That was, and then I mean, some of these boats, some of the boats do come in. They were old boats, and there was trainer men on them. There was trainer people, crews, and they were, of course, they were unloading it from their boat onto the deck, and then into another one of these boats to take out. So you'd have that to look after.
So where were these? Where were the Chinese people coming from?
Well, they were coming in these boats, just bringing the stuff in. There were some boats coming from abroad in with the stuff to Cairn Ryan to be dumped.
So it was coming in from all over the place?
I was saying, why? No, it was coming in by train and coming in by boats.
God, so it was kind of an armaments dump for the world, basically.
Aye. I mean, the train's coming in every day, and then there's some saying maybe two boats would come in and they'd dump it, put it in the. They usually try to alter range that there's another old boat to. Going away to be sunk, and then they just transfer one boat. The cranes transferred them onto the jetty and out along a bit, into another crane, and then up and into this old boat to be dumped.
That's amazing.
Oh, yeah. It aye. Yeah. Oh, it went on for years.
Yeah.
I did. I mean, now the pier is the main dock is now going to be used. Because it wasn't a problem. It's not maintained since the government finished with it. Bar the contractor had it for a while. He was seeing boats coming in and taking the boulders, 3-inch, what do you call it, 3-inch stones, pebbles and all that, 3-inch chips and all that, taking them away for building harbours all the way. She'd boats from Shetland, say Orkneys, never any place to come in. They were hauling this for the big quarry up above Cairn Ryan, down in and then through, right with them, and over these big lorries. It was just a wooden ramp. With the base of the jetty was just wood.
Yeah.
So there's big holes coming in it, so they claimed it unsafe.
Right.
And that's, I mean, it's well, I think that. I noticed this morning coming up, they must have opened the gates again. They must be doing somewhere.
I mean, were there any accidents at the time? Were there any explosions or anything?
No, never any explosions, John. No. Fortunately enough, there was never any explosion. None of that. Or the boats, when they're loading the boats or that. I mean, there's one or two scares. One or two that maybe caught fire then. They've gotten put out. The barges maybe. And the barges or one of the boats is unloading. But they always had. I mean, there's like a fire tender belonging to the WD stand by the whole time. So they could get into anything that was needed. That was. Used to be about 8 men at a time on the hole, lifting the boxes onto the plaques and then lifting them up, and another basket would come down and you put another thing. And then they described some saying, along with an old railway carries across the next boat and lift it up and put in another 8 men packing it. So they had. And then they always waited to tide suit it. And then they pulled it out and just scuttled it. So they did. There was quite a lot of things going during the war and all that. And then, of course, with the aeroplanes and stuff with Westbrook and with Castle Kennedy. And we had the. Bilgowan was a kind of repair station. It was up in amongst the trees. They had the hangars where they could take the planes and repair them. And then they brought them down. And of course, across the main, to take off again. They start away in the field, then they go across the main Dromore Road, and then along, still along the field, then up and away. So you had that sort of going. And then Castle Kennedy, well, then you had a big drum at Castle Kennedy.
Yeah.
And then we had another big one down at Wigton, at Ludnick. So we'd, and then we had the three camps for soldiers.
Yeah.
Oh, and then that was, because we had soldiers here, you know, for garden. And then we had quite a few ACAT guns and searchlights and all that. So these soldiers were brought around to different bits of the coast for, say, 24-hour spells. And you know, the huts for the men to stay in and during the 24-hour spells, in case of anything.
What did Uncle Robert do during the war?
He was a bus driver.
All right.
And he, at the, if I left like one of these, the hospital boats, was called planes and boats, and they were, they had to get down the pier with the buses and take them, maybe, didn't know where to take the troops. And plus, they had two of their buses converted, two of the 30-seater buses converted, and they had 10 stretchers in each bus.
Right, so.
For taking troops away, and then you had as many ambulances.
That's right.
So that's why the bus drivers, they were, they were exempt from being called up, because they were, they were the thing with the, I mean, I've seen Uncle Robert coming in at the 6:30 at night for his tea, and 8 o'clock is away out. They've got word there's a plane coming in, planes coming in with troops, wounded troops, or a boat coming in with wounded troops, and that, and then they wait to go down and sit down the pier and wait to come in and see where they're to be transferred to. As I'm saying, sometimes they could transfer, be transferring them up to Tunbury, or maybe away to Tunbury, or to Newhouse, any place like that, where the hospital up to, even up to Machnoe. So they could do that during the night, and then come back and do their normal duty during the day.
That's right. Because you told me a story last time of Uncle Robert in the first double-decker bus. What was that one again?
Well, Uncle Robert, when the first double-decker bus to come into Stranraer, well, I mean, they never had a double-decker bus. So I was just way back in 1938. The first double-decker bus they got in, and of course at that time they were getting ready for, I think it would be, it's maybe the coronation. So they put the streamers up and the lights and all that, they put them up. So of course Uncle Robert, the first morning he came down, they had been putting them up, say, at the weekend, the Monday morning he came down, and when he turned into King Street, from there on, he got that right up King Street, right down George Street, he got to the post office. He could hear ping, 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 but he didn't know what was going on. And when he got to the post office to collect the mail, to take it to Sandhead and Dromore and all that, the postman came and said, your bus is fancily decorated this morning. How? Here he was all, with all these, all these buttons and lights and everything all lying in the front of the double decker. Because they hadn't, no putting them high enough.
Right.
And they just put the whole lot away with. So they had to start and put them up higher for the sake of the double decker. It was the first double decker they'd brought, got into Stranraer. And that's what happened to him. He always stayed that. The first bus that was coming to Stranraer, and they took the bunting down for them. So they did. Oh,
why did the American? Why did the Americans come to the house?
Well, they would. They met them. No, they never came to my house. Oh. But they came to. They were in. Some saying they came, and they built the Air Force base at Wigby, which was, some saying, they built for the slipways and the huts and these big hangars for repairing the planes. And why they stayed? They were. While they were building it, they were staying in the transit camp. So they were stationed in the transit camp. Then they had to buy a, taken by bus from the Stranraer to Wigby. And then he took them away about 6 o'clock in the morning. And then about 8:30 again, you started bringing them back into Stranraer for their breakfast.
Right.
So you could bring them for your breakfast, and the drivers got their breakfast along with them. And then, of course, again, they brought them in for their lunch at dinner time, and then they brought them in for their tea. Usually when they brought them in for their tea at night time, that was finished, because, I mean, they couldn't see in the dark, because you weren't allowed lights or nothing in them days. So you were, so that's what they had to transported it. And then once it was finished, they went away. Well, you had American coming in with planes. Mm. You can move with planes, or sometimes you know the American community. Of course, with American, South Africans, everything, mm-hmm. Air Force men coming in, maybe to learn how to plan that. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Westbrook, well, that was quite a few planes there too. And then they had got a big house up about Sandhead, Belgragon. Mm-hmm. And the Air Force men slept there.
Right.
Then they had to be transported to from Belgragon to Westbrook for their meals. And they were, Uncle Robert and all that.
So it was all running around.
I mean, in them days, it was 7 days a week you're driving, no, just.
How did people in St. Ralph feel about the Americans?
They just took them in. They found them. They weren't okay with them.
No difficulty communicating with
them? No. Because the one of that long there, John Murray, say about 6 months, we had some of them American troops, while they were building the jetty and all that at Cairn Ryan.
Right.
And then, of course, just after that was just the audience. Of course, with every nationality, Jamaicans, South Africans, Americans coming either to West Fruca, to Big Bay, mm-hmm. first day to learn how to fly planes and all these, mm-hmm. fly the type of plane so you had. Mm-hmm. With all nationalities, you know. And that, and then, of course, the army had a place or something. They had three places at Cairn Ryan, three big camps at Cairn Ryan. Then up we just about a mile out of Stranraer, maybe a mile and a half, then another lot of the army troops, the engineers, they were in another camp, mm-hmm. where beside, because they built the railway, mm-hmm. the Royal Engineers built the railway from the siding, the Stranraer railway siding to Cairn Ryan. Well, they were stationed up there, and then of course the troops would come from Cairn Ryan by night time by train, mm-hmm. into what they tried the lime kiln, and then they'd go off there, and then they had a mile to walk into town, mm-hmm. and then the last train at night was about 11 o'clock back to Cairn Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
Quite a few didn't make it, and they had to walk to Cairn Ryan. That's quite amusing, and the pictures of that, the pubs and all that, they just had to get on with it.
Yeah.
Oh, and I mean, they'd done the especially on a Saturday, the wee restaurants, and the restaurants in Stranraer were chock-a-block.
Uh-huh.
Because, I mean, the chops come in, and they'd maybe go to the canteen at 3 o'clock and get a cup of tea, and they'd wander around the town, get odds and ends, like shaving cream and all these kind of stuff. And then maybe go to some of the wee coffees and have a tea, mm-hmm. and then go to the first or second house of the pictures.
Mm-hmm. Were there many picture houses in
Stranraer? There was two at that time. Mm-hmm. And then you had both picture houses, then a show at 6 o'clock and then a quarter past eight.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them. And then they changed the films every 3 times a week. So of course there's queues. If you went to the pictures, it didn't matter whether it was the second house or the first house you went to, you had to be doing a bit roughly half an hour before the picture started. You want it to be near the front of the queue kind of style, because of that queue, you know. Mm. And you said that, and then the canteen. So, well, then the canteens too, they could get cooked meals.
Mm.
So they could, but most of them just wanted a cup of tea and maybe a scone and a cake. And then at that time, during the war, sweets and chocolates were rationed.
Mm.
Well, then they used to have a supply every day. They sold so many in the afternoon and so many at night in the canteens.
Mm-hmm.
Well, some of the troops used to get fly. They knew, whenever they opened in the afternoon, they sell the chocolates.
Right.
So it meant that some of them, it was the same people who were getting them every time.
Uh-huh.
So what they had to do was vary it. Instead of giving it first thing in the afternoon, they maybe had to wear it, say, half past 3, 4 o'clock or that,
right.
So that they wouldn't know. And then some of them did come in and they'd stay in the canteens, and then the ladies would say, what are you waiting on? You think you're going to get the sweeties first, because you got them yesterday kind of stuff. They had to chase them away. So they had to, And then, of course, an odd time, you had to get the MPs not in to kind of quieten them down. There wasn't ever that much bother with them, wasn't it?
Sounds like it was an exciting time for the time.
Oh, aye. Mm. The only thing is, you had no lights, you couldn't see where you're going. You had to go then of course, and the torches, in your torch, you had to have a piece of greaseproof paper in it, so your light wouldn't be reflected. Mm-hmm. Can you just redo it? Mm-hmm. And then on the cars and the buses, well, the head lamps was filled in, and you just had, on the legs of the buses, they had the one strip about an inch wide for about 4 inches long, and then the one, another one down below that, about 2.5 inches long, and then one at the bottom, about an inch, mm-hmm. just for a bit, maybe that. Mm-hmm. For that was, and that was your light, and you had to kind of try and see that. Yeah. And then, of course, you had to hear your inside lights and your bushes dim too.
Because there wasn't any traffic.
No, but then there wasn't so much traffic, then you still had the military. We had still the military moving a bit. So we had still the military moving a bit. Oh, right, you never knew. And then, of course, in them days, the bushes, the conductors could speak into the driver through a window. Mm-hmm. And one night, Uncle Robert was going to taking the last bus to West Fruquay Airmen, and the next thing, the window opened. They thought it was one of the conductors going to speak to him. He was a Canadian with a knife at his back, so it was. Yeah, they wanted the father to take him someplace. I can't mind where he was to be taken. Right. Of course, some of the rest of the chaps seen it and knocked him down. Mm-hmm. We'd had too much to drink, John. Aye. And when he got home, it's a wee window, and he says, "You take me such and such a place." You mean he actually poked the knife into his back?
Hijack a bus?
Oh, hijack a double decker bus with 55 men on it, so it is, aye.
Oh, yes, it is. And we've been called to
T.I.
Anyway, thanks for
John.